They say blood is thicker than water, yet that adage failed the wealthiest duke in Yorkshire when a festering fever took hold. As he withered, his noble kin abandoned him, locking the chamber doors to escape contagion. Ultimately, it was not a peer of the realm who brought salvation, but a servant armed with nothing more than a mop. The year was 1884, and the winter wind howling across the Yorkshire moors carried with it a bitter, biting chill. High on a hill overlooking the frozen valley stood Ashbourne Manor, a sprawling estate of dark stone, towering chimneys, and a formidable reputation. At its helm was Nathaniel Crawford, the Duke of Ashbourne. At 42, Nathaniel was a man forged in the fires of industry and hardened by personal tragedy. Since the sudden death of his beloved wife, Genevieve, 3 years prior, the Duke had become a ghost in his own home. He was a man of immense, almost incomprehensible wealth, controlling a vast fleet of merchant ships that traded from London to the farthest reaches of the Orient. Yet his heart was entirely bankrupt. Nathaniel ruled his estate and his businesses with an iron fist, his demeanor as cold as the frost clinging to his window panes. This stoic isolation made him a target of quiet resentment, particularly from the two people who stood to gain the most from his demise: his younger brother, Richard Crawford, and his younger sister, Lady Catherine Linville. Richard was a man utterly devoid of his brother's business acumen, but possessed a dangerous surplus of ambition. He had spent his adult life drowning in gambling debts in London, constantly writing to Nathaniel for bailouts. Catherine, married to an impoverished earl, was entirely motivated by social vanity, desperate to fund a lavish lifestyle she could no longer afford. They both circled the Duke like vultures, waiting for grief or exhaustion to finally strike him down. Their twisted prayers were answered on a bleak Tuesday evening in late November. The estate was hosting a rare family dinner, forced upon the Duke by Richard, who claimed he needed to discuss vital matters of the estate. The grand dining room was a theater of opulence. Crystal chandeliers cast a warm glow over the mahogany table, which groaned under the weight of roasted pheasant, imported wines, and heavy silver candelabras. Nathaniel sat at the head of the table, his face pale and drawn. He had not been well for weeks, attributing his persistent fatigue and dull headaches to the damp autumn air and the stress of managing a recent dock workers' strike. Midway through the second course, Nathaniel's hand began to tremble violently. He reached for his crystal goblet, but his grip failed. The glass shattered against the fine china, spilling dark red wine across the white damask tablecloth like a spreading pool of blood. "Nathaniel," Catherine gasped, clutching her pearls in a display of exaggerated concern. The Duke tried to speak, but only a ragged, wet cough escaped his lips. He stood, his chair scraping violently against the floorboards. Before his eyes rolled back and he collapsed, his towering frame crashing to the floor. The great Duke of Ashbourne convulsed, his skin burning with an unnatural, terrifying heat. Pandemonium erupted. The head butler, Mr. Higgins, immediately dispatched a rider to fetch Dr. Aris Hawthorne from the nearby village. When the physician finally arrived, his examination was swift, and his expression was exceedingly grim. He pulled Richard and Catherine into the shadowed hallway. "It is a severe fever, my lord," Dr. Hawthorne whispered, his voice trembling as he wiped his brow. "But the symptoms, the rash on his chest, the internal hemorrhaging, the sheer aggression of the temperature, it mirrors the Asiatic cholera, mixed with a highly virulent strain of typhoid. It is airborne, and it is deadly. I have seen men die of this in the colonies in less than 3 days. You must quarantine the West Wing immediately. Fear is a powerful solvent. It instantly dissolves the thin veneer of loyalty and love. The moment the doctor uttered the word deadly, Richard and Catherine exchanged a look that spoke volumes. It was a look not of sorrow, but of desperate self-preservation, mingled with a dark, blooming hope. "We cannot risk the family line," Richard declared, his voice shaking but resolute. "Catherine, pack your trunks. We leave for London at first light." "But what of Nathaniel?" Dr. Hawthorne asked, appalled. "He is in God's hands now," Catherine sneered, pulling her silk shawl tighter around her shoulders. "And I refuse to catch my death in this wretched, infected house." By dawn, the sprawling Ashbourne Manor was thrown into sheer chaos. Word of the highly contagious, flesh-eating fever spread among the staff like wildfire. Survival instincts overpowered any sense of duty. The footman packed the family's trunks. Mr. Higgins, the loyal butler of 20 years, quietly packed his own bags. Mrs. Croft, the head housekeeper, ordered the lower staff to evacuate the premises. By noon, the grand carriages of the Crawford family rolled down the gravel driveway, disappearing into the fog. They left behind no instructions for care, no promises of return. They simply locked the heavy oak doors of the West Wing from the outside. The wealthiest man in Yorkshire, the feared and respected Duke of Ashbourne, was left entirely alone in his gilded cage to suffocate in his own feverish agony. The fires in the hearths burned down to ash. The silence of the great house became deafening, save for the ragged, tortured breathing echoing from the master suite. In the damp, draughty cellars of the estate, far removed from the crystal chandeliers and silk tapestries, lived Abigail Hayes. Abigail was 22, a girl of quiet resilience and invisible existence. Born to a poor tenant farmer who had perished in a mining collapse, she had been taken in by the estate out of charity to work in the scullery. For 7 years, she had scrubbed floors, plucked chickens, and hauled boiling water until her hands were raw and blistered. She was a phantom in the manor. The Duke of Ashbourne did not know her name, and she had only ever seen the back of his dark coats as he rode out on his stallion. When the panic swept through the servants' quarters, Abigail had been in the root cellar, taking inventory of the winter potatoes. By the time she emerged, wiping dirt from her apron, the lower halls were eerily vacant. The grand kitchen, usually a symphony of clattering pots and shouting cooks, was dead silent. A half-plucked goose sat abandoned on the butcher's block. Confused, Abigail climbed the servant stairs. She found empty bedchambers, doors left ajar, and dropped items scattered across the floorboards. It took her wandering into the grand foyer to find the note hastily pinned to the green baize door by the housekeeper, warning anyone left behind to flee the contagion. She stood in the cavernous hallway, the silence pressing against her eardrums. She was free. She could walk out the door, take the few coins she had saved, and start a life in the city. But then, breaking through the deathly quiet of the house, she heard it. A low, agonizing groan drifting down from the west wing. Abigail looked toward the grand staircase. She thought of the man up there. A cold, distant ruler. Yes, but a human being. The thought of leaving a man, any man, to die alone, locked in the dark, choking on his own fever, twisted her stomach into knots. She remembered her own father, coughing his lungs out in a freezing, soot-stained shack while the world walked by. "God forgive me," Abigail whispered to the empty hall. She turned on her heel and marched back to the kitchens. She stoked the massive cast-iron stove, boiling great vats of water. She gathered clean linen sheets, a heavy bucket of ice from the winter stores, and an armful of willow bark and meadow sweet, remedies her mother had taught her to use for breaking dangerous fevers. Carrying her heavy supplies, she climbed the grand staircase. The doors to the west wing were indeed locked from the outside with a heavy iron bolt. With a grunt of exertion, she threw the bolt back and stepped into the forbidden territory. The stench hit her immediately, a cloying, sweet and sour smell of sickness and decay. The heavy velvet curtains were drawn tight, plunging the master suite into suffocating darkness. Abigail set her buckets down and threw open the drapes, letting the bleak afternoon light spill into the room. The sight of the Duke stopped her in her tracks. Nathaniel Crawford was unrecognizable. The fearsome, impeccably tailored titan of industry was reduced to a fragile, shivering wreck. His skin was a ghastly shade of gray, soaked in a cold, oily sweat. His lips were cracked and bleeding, his breathing shallow and rattling. He thrashed weakly against the tangled silk sheets, trapped in a relentless delirium. Abigail did not hesitate. Stripping off her heavy outer apron, she rolled up her sleeves and went to work. For the next 48 hours, she fought a war against death itself. She dragged a chair to his bedside and became his shadow. When he screamed in the throes of hallucinations, calling out for his late wife, she held his broad shoulders down to keep him from injuring himself. When his temperature spiked to terrifying heights, she stripped him of his sodden nightshirt, casting aside all Victorian propriety, and bathed his burning chest and face in ice water. It was grueling, terrifying work. Her muscles ached, and her own hands trembled from exhaustion. But she forced the willow bark tea down his throat, drop by drop. She cleaned his soiled linens, scrubbed the floors, and kept the fire roaring to battle the winter chill. She saw the Duke not as a master, but as a broken man, stripped of all his earthly power. In his vulnerability, she found a strange, profound pity. On the evening of the third day, a twist of fate occurred that would change the trajectory of both their lives. Abigail was clearing the small mahogany side table beside his bed. The Duke's personal crystal decanter of brandy sat there, half empty. Dr. Hawthorne had mentioned giving him a small sip to ease his nerves before he had collapsed. As Abigail picked up the heavy crystal, intending to wash it, a beam of firelight caught the bottom of the glass. She paused, bringing the decanter closer to her face. At the very bottom, swirling in the amber liquid, was a strange, milky residue. It wasn't natural sediment. She uncorked the stopper and gave it a tentative sniff. Beneath the sharp alcohol burn was a distinct, sweet scent. It smelled exactly like crushed bitter almonds, paired with a faint metallic tang. Abigail's heart pounded against her ribs. She had spent her childhood in the agricultural fields before the estate took her in. She knew what arsenic and cyanide derivatives smelled like. They were used in the lower fields to kill invasive pests. She looked from the decanter to the pale, dying face of the Duke. The sudden, aggressive onset of the illness. The specific internal pain he had cried out about in his delirium. The way Richard had been so incredibly swift to declare it a deadly plague and flee the house without a second thought, ensuring no one would come near the body. He wasn't just sick, Abigail realized, a cold dread washing over her. He was being murdered. If it were merely typhoid, her willow bark tea might save him. But if there was poison lingering in his blood, attacking his organs, he needed something else entirely. She remembered her mother using activated charcoal from the fire and raw egg whites to purge a dog that had eaten rat poison. With shaking hands, Abigail hid the decanter beneath her own meager belongings in the hallway. She rushed to the hearth, scraping the purest, darkest soot and charcoal from the firebox and sprinted down to the kitchens for the eggs. She spent the entire night forcing the horrid black mixture into the Duke's mouth, massaging his throat to make him swallow. He violently rejected it twice, painting the pristine carpets in black bile. But Abigail refused to give up. She held his head in her lap, wiping his brow, whispering words of comfort into the dark, empty room. "You must fight, Your Grace," she murmured fiercely, brushing his damp hair from his forehead. "They left you to the wolves. You cannot let them win. You must fight." Just before dawn on the fifth day, the rattling in his chest finally ceased. The oppressive heat radiating from his skin broke, replaced by a natural, cool clamminess. Abigail sat slumped in the armchair beside the bed, dead to the world, a damp rag still clutched in her stained hand. Slowly, painfully, Nathaniel Crawford's heavy eyelids fluttered open. The delirium was gone, leaving behind a profound, hollow exhaustion. He blinked against the morning light, his sharp eyes slowly focusing on the room. He expected to see his wife's ghost or the fires of hell. Instead, he saw the exhausted, sleeping form of a scullery maid, her apron ruined, her face smudged with soot, fiercely guarding his bed. He tried to speak, but his throat was raw. The sound made Abigail jolt awake. She gasped, leaping to her feet, instinctively dropping her gaze to the floor in the presence of the master. "Water!" he rasped, the single word costing him immense effort. Abigail quickly poured a fresh glass from her pitcher, supporting the back of his neck with a gentle hand as she brought the rim to his lips. He drank greedily, his dark eyes never leaving her face. Where is everyone?" he whispered hoarsely, sinking back into the pillows. "Richard? The doctor?" Abigail stood holding the glass, her heart hammering. She looked at the man who had been betrayed by his own blood, knowing the terrible secret she had hidden away in the hallway. "They are gone, Your Grace," she said softly, her voice steady despite her fear. "They believed you were dying. They locked the doors and fled." Nathaniel stared at her, the harsh reality of her words sinking into his recovering mind. He looked at her blistered hands, the dark circles under her eyes, and the clean, cool sheets he lay upon. "And you?" he asked, his voice barely a breath. "Why didn't you run?" "Because I could not leave a man to die in the dark," Abigail replied, her voice trembling slightly under his intense gaze. "My father died alone in a cold room while the world went on without him. I swore to God I would never let another soul suffer that fate if I had the power to stop it." Nathaniel Crawford, a man who had negotiated with ruthless railway barons and dined with prime ministers, found himself entirely disarmed by the raw, unpolished honesty of a servant. He studied her, the fierce set of her jaw, the exhaustion bruising the skin beneath her eyes. She had dragged him back from the abyss, risking her own life for a master who had never so much as looked at her. "You are exceptionally brave, or exceptionally foolish," Nathaniel murmured, his chest rising and falling with a slow, steady rhythm. "What is your name?" "Abigail, Your Grace. Abigail Hayes." "Well, Abigail Hayes," he sighed, letting his head sink into the pillows. "It appears I owe you my life, though I fear my brother has ensured it will be a short one once he realizes the fever did not finish the job." Abigail's breath hitched. She stepped back, her hands wringing her ruined apron. "Your Grace, there is something you must see." She hurried out into the dimly lit corridor and returned a moment later, carrying the heavy crystal decanter. She set it on the mattress beside his hand. "I was going to wash it," she whispered, "but the sediment and the smell, it smells of bitter almonds and metal, like the pesticide the groundskeepers use on the lower estate." Nathaniel's brow furrowed. With a shaking hand, he pulled the glass stopper and brought the rim to his nose. Even weakened, his senses were sharp. The sweet, treacherous scent of prussic acid, a lethal cyanide derivative, wafted up. The fever, the agonizing cramps, the sudden collapse, it hadn't been an airborne plague at all. It had been murder, served in a glass of his favorite French brandy. A terrifying silence filled the room. When Nathaniel finally looked up at Abigail, the lingering weakness in his eyes had been entirely incinerated by a cold, devastating fury. The formidable Duke of Ashbourne had returned. "They locked the doors," Nathaniel said, his voice dropping to a lethal whisper. "They diagnosed me with a highly contagious fever to ensure no physician or servant would dare come near the body. They left me to choke on my own blood so they could inherit the Crawford fortune."
"What will you do, Your Grace?" Abigail asked, her heart pounding.
"For now, I will play dead," Nathaniel stated, a dangerous smirk ghosting across his cracked lips. "And you, Abigail, are going to help me ruin them." Over the next 2 weeks, the locked west wing of Ashbourne Manor became their secret fortress. Nathaniel's recovery was slow and agonizing, but his thirst for vengeance fueled his healing. Abigail became his nurse, his confidant, and his only link to the outside world. She sneaked down to the abandoned pantries at midnight to scavenge for cured meats, flour, and root vegetables, cooking over the bedroom hearth so no smoke would rise from the kitchen chimneys. During the long, quiet hours of his convalescence, the rigid boundaries of their social stations began to dissolve. Nathaniel learned of Abigail's father, her love for the rugged Yorkshire moors, and her sharp, observant mind. She learned that the terrifying Duke was, underneath his grief, a man of deep intellect and unexpected dry wit. He watched the way the firelight caught the coppery strands of her hair, and he found himself waiting for the sound of her footsteps with an anticipation he hadn't felt in years. By the third week, Nathaniel was strong enough to stand. He drafted a coded telegram and entrusted Abigail to walk 5 miles through the snow to the next village to send it. It was addressed to Inspector Frederick Aberline at Scotland Yard in London, a man Nathaniel had once assisted with a complex smuggling investigation on the London docks. When Abigail returned, her cheeks flushed red from the freezing wind, Nathaniel took her frozen hands in his own, rubbing warmth back into her bruised knuckles. "The trap is set," he told her softly, his thumb brushing over a callus on her palm. "My brother is hosting a gathering in London tomorrow evening to formally read my will. We leave at midnight." Abigail looked down at their joined hands, a pang of sorrow hitting her. The battle was ending. He would return to his gilded world, and she would fade back into the shadows. "I will pack your trunks, Your Grace." "No, Abigail," Nathaniel said, his grip tightening, forcing her to look up into his dark, piercing eyes. "You will pack yours. You are coming with me." The Crawford townhouse in London's exclusive Grosvenor Square was ablaze with light. Though black mourning crepe hung over the grand entrance, the atmosphere inside felt suspiciously celebratory. In the lavish drawing room, the elite of London society mingled, murmuring their fabricated condolences while sipping vintage champagne. At the center of the room stood Richard Crawford, wearing a tailored black suit with a silk mourning band, doing his utmost to look somber. Beside him, Lady Catherine was draped in black velvet, though the mourning attire was thoroughly offset by the glittering Ashbourne diamonds clasped around her throat, jewels she had wasted no time liberating from the estate's London vault. "It is a tragic loss for the realm," Richard told a sympathetic earl, sighing heavily. "But the physician assured me it was a mercifully quick end. The plague took him in the night.
I am just thankful Catherine and I were spared to carry on the family legacy. At the far end of the room, Mr. Arthur Pendleton, the family solicitor, cleared his throat and tapped his silver gavel against a mahogany desk. "My lords and ladies," Pendleton announced, adjusting his spectacles, "if we might gather, we are here to formally recognize the passing of Nathaniel Crawford, Duke of Ashbourne, and to execute his final testament. As His Grace left no living heir, the estate titles and holdings will transfer to..." The heavy double doors of the drawing room slammed open with a crack like a musket shot. The murmuring crowd fell instantly, suffocatingly silent. Women gasped. Men spilled their drinks. Standing in the threshold, looking paler than usual, but radiating an aura of absolute, terrifying authority, was Nathaniel Crawford. He was dressed in a pristine black greatcoat, leaning slightly on a silver-tipped cane. Beside him stood a beautiful young woman in a modest but elegant traveling gown, Abigail, her chin held high despite the hundreds of aristocratic eyes boring into her. Richard dropped his crystal champagne flute. It shattered on the marble floor, the sharp sound echoing in the dead quiet. All the blood drained from his face, leaving him the color of old parchment. Catherine let out a strangled shriek, her hands flying to her throat as if the diamonds were suddenly choking her. "Good evening, Richard," Nathaniel's voice cut through the room like a freshly sharpened blade. "I apologize for my tardiness to my own funeral. The traffic in Mayfair is simply murder these days."
Nathaniel?
Richard stammered, his knees visibly shaking.
It cannot be. You are dead.
The plague. A remarkable diagnosis, Nathaniel interrupted, stepping fully into the room. The sea of aristocrats parted for him as if he were Moses dividing the Red Sea. Especially considering there was no plague, only a rather generous pouring of prussic acid in my evening brandy. A collective gasp swept through the room.
"Lies!" Catherine shrieked, her voice shrill with panic. "He is delirious! The fever has rotted his brain!"
"I assure you, dear sister, my mind is exceptionally clear," Nathaniel said smoothly. He gestured toward the hallway. "Though I brought a second opinion, just to be certain." From the shadows of the corridor stepped Inspector Frederick Abberline. The famed Scotland Yard detective tipped his bowler hat, a grim, satisfied smile on his face. He was flanked by four uniformed constables. In Abberline's gloved hand, safely sealed in a glass evidence jar, was the crystal decanter Abigail had saved.
"Lord Richard Crawford, Lady Catherine Linville,"
Inspector Abberline boomed, his voice carrying the full weight of the crown. "You are under arrest for the attempted murder of the Duke of Ashbourne. We have matched the poison in this vessel to a purchase made under a false name by your footman 3 weeks ago." Panic consumed the siblings. Richard tried to bolt toward the terrace doors, but two constables tackled him to the Aubusson rug, pinning his arms behind his back. Catherine collapsed onto a velvet sofa, weeping hysterically, the stolen diamonds catching her tears. Nathaniel stood over his brother, his expression devoid of any mercy. "You thought you left me in the dark to die, Richard. But you forgot one crucial thing. It is in the dark that the Crawford wolves learn to hunt." As the disgraced siblings were dragged out of the townhouse, kicking and screaming into the damp London night, the aristocratic crowd began to break out in shocked, feverish whispers. Nathaniel turned away from the spectacle, his eyes seeking only one person in the room. Abigail stood near the entrance, looking entirely overwhelmed by the opulence and the chaos. Nathaniel walked toward her, discarding his cane. The terrifying, vengeful Duke melted away leaving only the man she had nursed back to life in a freezing bedroom.
"It is done," he said softly, standing before her.
"You have your life back, Your Grace," Abigail smiled, though her eyes shone with unshed tears.
"You have your empire."
"An empire is nothing but cold stones and empty halls, Abigail," Nathaniel replied. He reached out, gently taking her scarred, blistered hands, hands that had scrubbed floors, hands that had fought off death, and raised them to his lips, kissing her knuckles in front of the most powerful lords and ladies in England.
"I was a dead man before you walked into that room," he whispered, his voice thick with emotion, loud enough for the gossiping aristocrats to hear.
"You gave me back my life, and I would be profoundly honored if you would allow me to spend the rest of it attempting to be worthy of you. Will you marry me, Abigail?"
The drawing room erupted into a shockwave of gasps. A scullery maid? Becoming the Duchess of Ashbourne? It was a scandal that would rock the foundations of British high society.
But Abigail didn't look at the crowd. She looked at Nathaniel. She saw the warmth, the fierce loyalty, and the man who saw her not as a servant, but as his savior and equal. With a bright, tearful laugh, Abigail squeezed his hands.
"Only if you promise never to drink the brandy without me, Your Grace."
Nathaniel smiled, a true, brilliant smile that reached his eyes for the first time in years. He pulled her into his arms, kissing her deeply, sealing a vow forged not in gold or bloodlines, but in the quiet, unyielding courage of the human heart.
Did the Duke's dramatic return give you chills?
If you loved this story of betrayal, courage, and a love that defied all societal rules, make sure to hit that like button. Share this video with a fellow historical romance lover, and don't forget to subscribe for more thrilling, suspenseful love stories brought to life. Ring the notification bell so you never miss a twist, and tell us in the comments what you would have done in Abigail's shoes.